RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to Mana Wahine Korero's oral submission to the Parliament Petitions Select Committee on the Midwifery Council's misuse, they say, of Te Reo Māori in its revised scope of practice, which the committee declined to uphold for public view. And Mana Wahine Korero tell us they were not given a reason for this, and we'll find out about that real soon. Now, you might remember Deb Hayes was on this program a while back, and she launched a petition against the removal of woman and baby from the Midwifery Council's revised scope of practice. And a quick timeline, just to get everybody in the zone. So we start in July, August 2019. Midwifery Council CEO and Registrar Sharon Cole meets with Ministry of Health officials, then writes a letter requesting $377,000 to fund the midwifery project, which included revising the scope of practice. The Midwifery Council selected a working group and called it the Collaborative Reference Group, CRG. The dates and processes of this selection are unknown. Midwifery Council share their journey on their website, which you'll find that this is a pattern as we go on, which is no longer there. They sought consultation from a Dr. George Parker. A video of Dr. George Parker speaking about their contribution was removed from the Midwifery Council's website. The CRG used the work of Dr. George Parker et al., the Trans Pregnancy Care Project. So that's where it started, and everything sort of happened from there. So coming on to RCR right now from Mana Wahine Korero, they are Aropu of Tangata Whenua, Wahine and Allies. Their mahi seeks to protect, preserve and uphold the mana of Wahine, Tamariki and Māoritanga from fourth industrial revolution developments such as gender identity, transgenderism, transhumanism and dehumanization, which distorts and misrepresents the real, the whakapapa, the tikanga and the tipuna. Di Landy and Sarah Henderson, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so a bit of history, or continuing with a bit of history here. Was there any need to revise any practice at all? I mean, midwifery's been, it's been around since, well, humans, and I have experience of midwives with my three kids and seem to work pretty well, and that was 30 years ago. So, you know, do you try and fix something that isn't broken, I'm wondering?
Well, the scope of practice, the first scope of practice came out of a document that was developed initially by the Home Birth Association when midwifery was first kind of becoming the primary workforce in maternity as opposed to obstetricians. And, you know, midwifery allows for a lead maternity carer, someone who looks after you from beginning to end. So this was all happening in the 80s and 90s, and they put out, the Home Birth Association kind of had a document that stated what a midwife does, essentially, and then the College of Midwives turned that into the in development with the Midwifery Council, which was a new body at the time, so early 90s. They developed the first scope of practice, and the scope of practice that has been updated was first written in 2010, published in the New Zealand Gazette in 2010, and it's very straightforward. Anybody who reads it can immediately appreciate what a midwife's job is. And what the parameters of that role are. And all regulatory authorities, individual professions, and I think there's about 18 of them, have provided for under the Health Practitioners Competence Assurance Act. And then secondary legislation under that act allows for what those professions can determine, and they each must write a scope of practice that prescribes what they do, what their individual profession does. So in the context of updating a document that is now 14 years old, and at the time when they first made the application to do this, it was in 2019, there's no objection, fundamental objection, to making sure that a legislative document that provides for a health profession is
right,
properly worded. That could it be improved upon? So in that sense, you know, but it was working. So we have a really good midwifery service in New Zealand that is kind of the envy of certainly of Australian women. Look at across the ditch here and go, oh, they're pretty lucky, you know. It wasn't really broken, but it's justifiable or arguable that you could update it, but not like this.
Right. Di, anything to say on that?
Yeah, I don't believe there was any need to update it. You know, time begun, it's been woman birthing babies, and when time ends, it's still going to be woman birthing babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my problem with the scope of practice, Paul, is that it takes the midwives off their core business, which is mother and babies, and includes everyone else. So it's kind of like turning them into mini social workers without really good direction. So they've been taken off the core practice of mums and bubs with this new scope. That comes into effect on Tuesday.
Yes.
Right. Tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, turning them into social workers. So what do you think the thinking is behind that from the Midwifery Council? Why do they feel they need to do that, do you think?
Well, I think it's to include the transborg myself and to include these women who I'm going to say are not too tightly wrapped that believe they're men and then want a baby. I think it's to include this aspect.
But that's impossible, isn't it? Last time I looked.
Yes.
No, it's really not. And it's certainly impossible for men to have babies, but it's not impossible that's the reason why this is happening. And, you know, there's a really clear line. It's not very difficult to find the information between postmodern philosophizing academics and the Midwifery Council scope of practice. It's quite clear that they have an agenda here to include people to make the language of the scope. They've used the excuse that, oh, it's time to update it, to do this terrible, play this terrible linguistic trick on midwives and women and people around New Zealand.
I mentioned that Dr. George Parker, the Trans Pregnancy Care Project. I'm thinking he must have had a lot of sway.
She. It's a woman.
She.
George Parker identifies as something other than a woman. And
non-binary.
Yeah. Okay, so a woman who identifies as non-binary, is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah, but she's a woman.
Okay, see, and we're all over the place with this, aren't we? So obviously a lot of influence from that woman.
Yes.
Well, the number of direct connections between the Trans Pregnancy Care Project and the Midwifery Council Scope of Practice Project, which happened under the auspices of the Aotearoa Midwifery Project, that's what they called it, there are direct links. The Midwifery Council provided glossary definitions for the words that are under contention in the scope for breastfeeding midwifery projects that Dr. George Parker did, and used the exact same language that the Trans Pregnancy Care Project was using in the scope at the exact same time. So it strains credulity to think that there's no connection here.
I mean, an obvious question is, where does all that influence come from? How do you capture so well an organisation like this? Just curious. Any thoughts on that?
We're just in lockstep with everyone else across the Western world with this garbage. You know, it's not only midwifery care, it's also La Leash League is fully captured as well. So, you know, they're going to encourage men to chest feed babies.
Oh, dear.
Hmm. Yeah, and it all sounds preposterous, but it's all very true. And none of it is a secret. It's only a single Google, search, and you're there. So, but you asked about, how do you capture an organization? And it's actually, if you were of the mind to capture an organization, it's fairly straightforward. You have a few high level people who are very sort of persuasive, and you make sure that they're in positions of influence, and the rest of them just kind of follow along. And before you know it, you've got a captured institution. And that's what's happened here.
It's interesting because they put out for feedback after their first draft was released back in May 2022. What came back was 90.8% negative. 90.8%. Boy, if I was buying Lotto and I had those odds, I'd be buying hundreds and hundreds of tickets.
Yeah, right? So it's obvious people care.
Stretches credulity again.
Yeah, that's right. It is. It's obvious that people care.
But it's so easily ignored. So you really have to ask the question, is there any consultation at all? Is it just a box-ticking exercise or a genuine reach out to find out what people think? And when you ignore 90.8%?
Well, in terms of their reach out, you know, if they were in advertising or looking to really engage the public, their minute paragraph in the Midwives E-Midpoint newsletter, well, that's not really a strategy for reaching New Zealand women, is it? You know, and the public only found out about it because they did this. They put this the feedback. We've done the feedback. They waited for a year to tell everybody what that feedback was, that 90.8% of all 400 respondents hated it. And then the way that they let people know about that was on 29th of November, same thing again. They put we've done the feedback, and it's a lovely report. It's beautifully set out with nice framing and titles and everything, but it doesn't change the fact that it still says that everybody doesn't like it. So they put this tiny little paragraph in, and it's only thanks to somebody at the College of Midwives who alerted the Women's Rights Party, who put it on Twitter, where we saw it, that anybody, you know, that we ever heard about it. So in terms of their public engagement, obviously it's a box-ticking exercise, a tokenistic box-ticking exercise that they have to engage in.
The other interesting thing is the removal along the way of certain items as they went. Obviously, I'm thinking in reaction to what sort of blew back on them. This seems to be a pattern. I said that before. It does, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, we published after that that little notification, which said basically that they'd read the feedback, put it in a report, and decided, taken a unanimous vote to adopt the scope as worded, which at the time had no words for women or pregnancy or childbirth or anything referencing women and babies at all in either language, English or Te Reo Māori. And they included what they laughably call an explanatory paragraph, and it explains absolutely nothing except that they're determined to use the word whānau to represent women and babies. And I'll let Di speak to that because...
I'm going to ask, where does Te Tiriti come into it? Because that is mentioned in a lot of their communication material, Di.
Oh, look, this is just one of those rage, bark, laugh situations, Paul, because everyone's happy to te tiriti this and te tiriti that at the same time that they colonise and bastardise te reo, so that what we've ended up with, and I saw a really good phrase today, is mic reo, because it's just, you know, they're taking the Māori language, repurposing it and removing the guts of it. You know, these words come with long kept and long held beliefs and concepts, and the new words that we're given back are nothing but a poetic phrase without substance.
And those new words are, what are they?
Kahu pōkai for midwife, which there's no way you can get midwife from kahu and pōkai, and whānau for mother and baby. Now, whānau...
Okay, well, that's not very specific at all, is it?
No, well, whānau wasn't mother and baby. Whānau is whakapapa and marriage. The rest is whanaungatanga. You know, like, our group of friends, they're our whanaunga. They're not our whānau.
Yeah.
You know, and language matters, irrelevant of the language, but we're seeing Māori misused everywhere and all these so-called gifting.
Mm-mm.
The word they use for... midwife. What was it again?
Kahu pōkai.
It's kahu pōkai.
And what does that actually mean directly in Māori?
Well, there is no direct translation, but it's to do with birds, flocks, albumen, miscarriage, the wrapping.
Oh.
You know, like you would put a handle on a knife, you'd wrap it in string, the whip it, it's called whipping. You cannot get kahu midwife from kahu pōkai. And all the Māori that I've asked have stared blankly at me or just laughed at me.
Mm.
And when I've said that that's a new word for midwife, they're going, oh, no, girl, you can't no, that doesn't make sense. You can't do that. And then when I told them that they're doing it and what have you, it's just no, no. So like I say, they're taking the whole concepts of words and just discarding them and adding their own definition to it.
And they insist that they're not changing the definition.
Yes,
we're not doing that. We're not. We're expanding. You know, it's a textured and layered definition that we have to explain. And sometimes it means an inclusive term that kind of represents the diversity of individuals within their social context. And sometimes it means, you know, wahine and pepe and pregnant woman person. So what, you know... It's just that it doesn't mean any of those things. It's so ridiculous. And we're not stupid. We're saying, yes, you are redefining it and you're wrong about what you're saying that it means. And you asked about te tiriti o Waitangi. The number one rule, you know, the guiding light, if you like, in the scope of practice, rule A is te tiriti o Waitangi is embedded in the practice of a kahu pōkai / midwife and underpins everything you do. Now, it's just impossible to interpret for a midwife, and you have to ask yourself, what is it that they're actually trying to say? And when you break it down and you look at the rest of it, because that's rule number one, it effectively means questioning anything else in the scope, so questioning the use of te reo Māori in the definitions, questioning the use of tikanga to mean, say, quality and safety, effectively means that you're automatically in conflict with rule number one and that you're not upholding the principles of cultural safety, which is, again, another term. Midwives aren't responsible for the cultural safety.
No, they're responsible for the safety of the mother and the baby.
That's right. The physical health, you know, and of course they are also aware of the emotional and psychological states of the women that they care for.
Yeah.
Of course they are. How can they avoid it? They're human beings and they're spending 9 months with this woman. they're capable of handling these situations without all of the language of midwifery needing to be changed so that the midwifery council and their scope of practice group can be inclusive and feel like they're learning to be good treaty partners, you know.
And that potentially puts midwives on dangerous ground too, because if someone says, hey, they haven't been culturally safe, there's a world of trouble, right?
Yes, but also in the Treaty of Waitangi, nowhere does it state you can change, use, alter any of the language. It doesn't say that in the treaty, that you can just come and change the meanings of words.
Well, when I think about, you know, them all standing around at Waitangi and I think, you know, if Busby and Kalenso had gone and said, now look, we're just going to change the word for whānau and we're going to take control of all the births and situations around wahine and pepe and, you know, we're just going to take these words. You won't mind that. I really just don't think that if there's any principle that can be extracted from the treaty, it is don't mess with our language and don't mess with our women and our babies.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get on to your oral submission that was declined for upload for public view. First of all, though, now, have I got this right? The words wahine and pepe were inserted later on. Why did they do that?
Well, on the 29th of November last year, they put this little tiny, minute, you need spectacles to read it, bit out about how they'd taken a unanimous vote. And I was quite upset. And I wrote a sternly worded article, which Deb Hayes got hold of. And I came on and talked with Marie as well. And from there, it just kind of cascaded. And on the 8th of December, just a few days after that article came out, they suddenly withdrew what they had described as their portal of transparency and openness to the scope of practice.
Yeah.
Suddenly it was gone from the website, you know. And I thought, well, I bet they're not that tech savvy. So I went, you know, straight away and just downloaded it from the web archive and re-uploaded it and sent it to everybody in email and printed it out, you know. And then they spent until 29th of January, you know, kind of trying to defend what they'd done. You know, what are we going to do? Tell them it's inclusive. So they went out into Chris Lynch Media, and they said, no, look, everybody's going to love it. You just don't understand. And there's no specific definition of a woman anyway. So, and midwives have to look after everybody, regardless of how they identify. And then the same, almost the same day in the spin-off, Dr. George Parker and a couple of others, including Elizabeth Kedikedi, co-authored an article which is written in pure academic postmodernist gobbledygook.
We can imagine.
Doesn't mean. And defended the whole thing. And then just a couple of days later, they took, in early February, the first week of February sometime, they'd contacted lawyers who'd obviously said to them, now, look, this is going to be really hard for
damage
you
control.
Yeah. You know, damage control. And they wrote, interestingly, now, this is kind of, we talked about this a little bit with Marie, they implied to their midwives in their documentation that they had the imprimatur of the Minister of Health over all this, but of course he's not allowed to be involved. And so then in that first week of February, they suddenly reinserted the words for women and babies back at wahine and pepe. They tried really hard not to say women in English as much as they could, or baby, but they sort of had to, but they did their best to say pregnant person. So again, you've got this mistranslation. You know, wahine doesn't mean pregnant person. So that's what happened. And then suddenly they're saying, you know, of course our original intention for the last 5 years since August 2019, it's always to be and put women and babies at the centre. You know, we just love women and babies, pregnant persons, we love them. We don't believe you.
Have I got this right? That the updated version was released only in English and the Tereo version remained hidden from public view. I think you make that point.
Yes.
Have you had anyone explain that to you?
No. They wrote to the Regulations Review Committee a short line that they had only gazetted the English version, not the Tereo version, and they didn't explain why. But in the story of their journey, they took three decisions. They spent all of it working out their framework for how they were going to work within the Treaty of Waitangi, and then they took three decisions. One was to ensure that there was a Tereo version of the scope because it would be inadequate without it. One was to make sure that all of the words like he and she and any kind of grammatical construction that would allow for correctly sexing people had to go in both languages. And that they had a really tricky time with their four Zoom meetings deciding to take all the words for women out. A couple of women said, you know, over my dead body, but there must have been some pretty impressive Zoom meetings because they all changed their minds within that time. And the only explanation provided, someone told them that this was consistent with Mātauranga Māori paradigms of holism.
Oh.
Which basically means everybody, when you break it down to what they're trying to say, they're saying that from a Māori worldview, everybody is one anyway, so we might as well just use a collective noun. And they fell for it, and they said, you know, we've been on a wonderful journey and we've learned heaps, and we're really good treaty partners now, and then they carried on.
All right, so can we fast forward now to the submission process to Parliament's Petition Select Committee? And we're talking about the Deb Hayes petition here, okay? And your oral submission was declined for upload for public view and no reason given. What do you think's going on there? What did you say in that? I mean, did you say something so terrible that no one could ever, ever be exposed to it? I mean, I'm looking, listeners, I can see Di and I can see Sarah now. They don't look like people who are going to go off their rockers. So what happened there? And here's an opportunity for those, well, no one's going to see it because it's not being uploaded, to hear what you submitted. So maybe we'll talk about why you think they did that, and then we'll hear the submission. How about that?
Oh, that would be awesome. Why they did it, I have no idea. We were not only not told why, we were not given a time frame. Word on the street is there's been complaints about how we dressed on the day.
Oh, well, how did you dress?
Oh, well, I wore my Manawahine Korero T-shirt.
Yeah.
I was on Zoom, so that was whatever, you know, and I had my Manawahine Korero T-shirt as well.
Okay, well, I've seen the logo on the letterhead, and that didn't blow me out of the water, so I'm struggling with that for a reason.
Yeah, we were just polled that late last night and this morning. It was our manner of dress. And Rex, who was my younger sister who was present, she was wearing a T-shirt of slurs to women that hold the line. Now, there's over 50 slurs on this T-shirt, Paul, so you actually have to be concentrating on her chest to be reading it. Okay. Now, you know, and all I can think is, you know, what was she wearing? So you can rape us and silence us for what we wear now.
Yeah, okay. Well, they must be very easily thrown off balance, these people. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the, in terms of, the, you know, why it hasn't been uploaded, we've been told that we're not going to get a reason why. We're not.
Oh, that's
you know,
not good
not
enough.
Tell us.
Come on, that's not living in the adult world, is it?
No, and we didn't say, you know, the only thing that we can think of is that we named some people, but we were very careful. We're pretty straight up about what we say, but we're also careful to maintain, you know, people's civil rights. And so we only named people who have already voluntarily put their own names in easily accessible public.
Okay, so it's all out there anyway.
Yep. It's all out there anyway.
All right, well, maybe we can hear what you submitted. Can we do that now?
So I went first on the Zoom, and I'll just start. Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Henderson, member of Manawahine Kōrero in support of petitioner Deb Hayes. We have read the council's response letter and we believe we owe the re-included words for wahine and pepe to Ms. Hayes and the woman who signed her petition, not to any genuine effort to consider feedback on the council's part. They ignored the first two rounds of feedback and only made changes after advice from lawyers in February. They are being disingenuous with respect to the Minister of Health. They know he is not allowed to direct the scope and they write as if he gave them advice and they heeded it. The scope is due to come into effect in less than a month, which is now tomorrow, and they are embedding it into midwifery education as we speak. We don't have any reason to think they are being transparent and we believe there are important questions in the public interest to be answered. We want to know what the total cost to the public has been and to see a detailed breakdown of what it was spent on. We are especially interested in what the relationship was between the council's scope and Dr. George Parker's trans pregnancy care project, as mentioned by Deb Hayes. This project was led by Dr. Parker at Victoria University with Dr. Miller at the Otago School of Midwifery. Both projects overlapped for a year and a half and used almost identical language, sometimes to the point of farce. For example, 2 years ago in November 22, Dr. Parker uploaded a publicly available YouTube video discussing her trans pregnancy care project. She said her team was, quote, hearing clearly from inside midwifery that they needed professional bodies to lead and mandate cultural humility in relation to trans and non-binary people, and closed by pronouncing that it wasn't a case of if midwifery had to go on this journey, but that they had to go on this journey. 3 days later, the council uploaded the new scope of practice to their website, mandating the removal of all the words for women, along with a story of their work called Our Journey. We also want to know if Dr. Parker's research partner, Dr. Miller, is still on the Midwifery Council's Professional Conduct Committee. Nobody who wants to mandate cultural humility should be on a conduct committee. What was Dr. Elizabeth Kerikeri's involvement with the scope of practice? She was an advisor to the Trans Pregnancy Care Project while she was a sitting MP and earned her philosophy degree, saying that there is no evidence of gender identity in pre-colonial Te Ao Māori, and then earning her living saying the opposite. Did she get paid for this work with Dr. Parker? The scope is supposed to be free of political involvement. The other person of note who consulted on the Trans Pregnancy Project was Mr. Jamie Veal, who runs the Trans Healthcare Research Lab at the University of Waikato. His master's thesis was titled Love of Oneself as a Woman and was concerned entirely with sexual proclivities, with transvestism, fetishism, sadism, and more. He is the president of PATHA and secretary of WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, who, it cannot be said enough, support the idea that eunuch is a sexuality and promoted the Eunuch Archives, a violent, fetishistic porn site where young boys have been abused and castrated. See the WPATH files. Has Mr. Veal ever advised the Midwifery Council or the Scope Project team on any matter? Did Dr. Parker's Trans Pregnancy Care Project provide the evidence base for the scope? Dr. Parker and Dr. Miller also co-authored a research paper on midwives supporting trans people with chest feeding. Once again, they released their work within days of the council scope in November 23. The introduction to this paper begins, "Not all people who breastfeed / chestfeed are women, yet every person who hopes to feed a baby from their body deserves the information, care and support required to do so." No, they don't. Men do not have this right. Babies have rights too. Only women can feed babies from their bodies, and the word is breastfeeding. The doctors write that midwives have an important role in supporting breastfeeding and that, quote, "this is clearly identified within the Midwifery Council scope of practice," which was the one in 2022, which had no women in it. Breastfeeding is not mentioned in the council's scope of practice, even now in 24. Returning the favour, the Midwifery Council provided them with a definition of whānau, the first two lines of which are, "Whānau is an inclusive term that is used to recognise the diversity of individuals within their social context. Whānau is a word indigenous to Aotearoa New Zealand." That is not what the council said it means in their letter, and it is a word indigenous to Māori. Finally, Doctors Parker, Kerikeri and Miller, all doctors of philosophy, wrote to the Spin Office in January this year in passionate defence of the scope, saying it was, quote, "focused on whānau rather than individual women / mothers and babies as the key relationship in care provision." The council, meanwhile, told this committee that the midwife's primary focus is on wahine and pepe and always was. We want to keep our midwifery service and our inspirational midwives and the model of care we have. But we want them to have a good council, and at the moment we think the council is in breach of the HPCAA. We believe their behaviour and statements warrant the interim cessation of work on the scope and an open government inquiry with public debate as described. We think, as we approach the 131st anniversary next week of suffragettes Merite Tai Mangakahia and Kate Shepherd's win for our right to vote, that as we're here today fighting for the definitions of the words wahine and woman, that this is a reasonable thing to ask for. We hope you will agree, and I will hand you now over to Di.
Tēnā koutou katoa. I am Diane Landy, co-founder of Manawahine Korero in support of petitioner and midwife Deb Hayes. As you know, Manawahine Korero rejects the Midwifery Council's revised scope of practice and their interpretation of our culture. In short, the word whānau, commonly understood as family, has been translated by the council so poorly that it has resulted in an unresolvable cultural contradiction in the scope and has to be accompanied by an explanatory paragraph. This has been caused by a lack of open national consultation with all wahine Māori, not just the tiny handful, and the Midwifery Council's commitment not to clinical goals but to social engineering. The council would like whānau to mean wahine hapu, pregnant person, in their social context, but it doesn't. Wahine and whānau are not interchangeable words. Whānau is the smallest familial unit within the iwi structure of iwi, hapu, and then whānau. Whānau is indivisible from whakapapa, from historical ties of blood and intermarriage, from our tūpuna, our ancestors and descendants. Wahine are the house of humanity in Te Ao. We are whare tangata and venerated for bearing life. All of our stories, artwork, music and every word in te reo tells us that only wahine become pregnant and give birth. Only wahine become mothers. To say otherwise is to undermine our tenets of belief and unravel the entirety of our culture, practiced and passed down through the centuries. It is incompatible with te ao to suggest, as the scope does, that there are people who are not women who have babies. By using whānau this way to mean pregnant woman or people, the council relegates the sacred role of wahine in our ability to bear children to an uncertain position and allows for the provision of midwifery care that sublimates the needs of wahine and our pepe to the desires of the people around them. The council's definition of whānau also appears to render the word redundant in the scope. If we use their definition, every time they say whānau alongside pregnant woman, they are saying they want midwives to care for pregnant woman and pregnant woman in their social context. None of the council's explanations for their use of whānau withstand close inspection. What does this mean for the pregnant wahine in prison? Who will be her whānau, according to the council? How will the South Wahine, who have had little exposure to te reo? The council is saying they want to fix the negative legacies of colonisation by tinkering with our language, the foundation of our family structure and our mothers. How can this possibly uphold our mana and mātauranga? We find that the translations and uses of the other te reo words in the scope are improper as well, especially kahu pōkai. We know that this new term for midwife was gifted to the council by the husband of a senior midwife in the College of Midwives, who also somehow found himself appointed to the scope development team as a consumer. Kahu pōkai is already being used in all the council publications and has replaced old, still living words in te reo that are understood as midwife. But it is impossible to get midwife from kahu pōkai, and both kahu and pōkai have associated definitions that, when applied to the midwifery workforce, are unsettling, sinister, or simply out of place. Why doesn't the word for midwife in te reo in the scope actually mean midwife? What was wrong with our original words? Why, when the council is so interested in balance and representation, did their February revisions include deleting the te reo version of the scope? The council has relentlessly referenced te reo or waitangi throughout the scope development. We remind them and everyone here that the Treaty of Waitangi does not say, imply, suggest, encourage, or permit the deletion or redefinition of any of our words. We think it is the council who have misunderstood the problem with their scope, not us. They have been tinkering around with this vanity project for the last 5 years, while our national mother and baby death statistics have remained exactly the same. Wahine Māori and all New Zealand women deserve better than this. As co-founder of Manawahine Kōrero, I believe Deb Hayes is right and that there should be an open government inquiry into the scope and the Midwifery Council. We believe all Wahine and women in New Zealand of every origin should have a chance to hear and contribute to this crucially important scope of practice. We would also like to note that the select committee we're presenting today, it did comprise of four Kauiwi men, and then they put one woman in, which I found quite disrespectful because childbirth and pregnancy is woman's business. Midwives' core roles have always been mother and baby and should stay this way. Noho tūturu, noho tangata.
Wow. Okay. Great to hear. Great to hear that. What a fantastic. That was incredible. Okay, well. Pity you wore the wrong shirts then, isn't it? Hey?
Yes, it's a shame.
It's all in the shirts. Always is. Okay, well, we're up against time. Those submissions say it all, but any final things you want to say before we end this chat? And then we'll get the feedback. I know it'll be pouring in.
Sarah, could you please talk to the Regulation Reviews Committee and not recording any of our work?
Yeah, so the issue with the fundamental issue here with not uploading our oral submission is not only that people aren't getting informed, but also that Mana Wahine Kōrero, of all the groups and individuals who submit on this issue to the to two select committees that the scope is currently the subject of, we're the ones that don't get to be heard. And we wrote to the Regulations Review Committee as well, because the scope has to. It has to undergo a process where before it can actually, well, it's because it's coming into effect tomorrow, obviously this doesn't have any teeth, but it does have to be regulated, and it's currently the subject of the Regulations Review Committee, which decides whether or not the wording is legislatively possible, basically. And so a lot of people and groups, including the Women's Rights Party, Katrina Biggs and others, and Deb Hayes, obviously wrote their submissions, and so did we. And you write, you have to say what the conflict is between the scope of practice and the standing orders, which is the secondary legislation that the review committee operates with. And so we did that. And our objections were really the same as others, but we did say, look, it's really important that we submit, because we're the only dedicated Māori women's organisation that is here to speak about the use of the word whānau. And now they wrote back to us, and they wrote a politely worded letter, much more much less brusque than the petitions committee. But the reasoning was, look, you know, we're just not seeing really any connection here. Goodbye.
Oh.
So what that means effectively is that our complaint was never made, because it doesn't go into the public record if they decide to consider it. So in terms of history, what that means is that nobody will know that we ever said anything, that we ever said no. And that's not acceptable. You know, we have a right to register at the very least our objection. And the same applies with the oral submission, that we're being written out of the record as though we were never there. Now, that tells the public that there's no objection to any of this, and it really is inclusive, and nobody minds, and Māori want this, you know, that's wrong. So we object. We also have questions about... the whole process seems to be unnecessarily difficult, and this isn't a new experience for people attempting to communicate with Parliament as gender issues.
That's right.
So...
All right, well, I think we're going to call time. Di, any quick last comment from you before we process all this?
Yes. Writing the only Māori women's group out of historical record is, that's some kind of next-level malfeasance in my mind. Paul, most of this work is done for historical record, because it's going to take a long time to turn this around, and now we're not even getting the right to have this recorded in history.
Yeah.
And it's not good enough.
I want to thank you, Di Landy, and you, Sarah Henderson, from Mana Wahine Korero, for coming on this morning and taking us through that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us and giving us the opportunity to say it. Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.